Okay, I'm Professor David McGilvery, and I have a chair in event and digital cultures at the University of the West of Scotland. And I guess I'm interested in writing, I guess, quite critical pieces on mega events and major events and their impacts on host communities.
So with the Commonwealth Games fast approaching, how do you think the event will benefit the city before, during and after?
We're obviously in the before stage at the moment, and I think, you know, I'm interested in the kind of history of the way that these major events have, whether you use the word benefited cities, and I think that's open to question. I think it's been open to a lot of scrutiny for a long time, especially large events, proper mega events, if we describe them, the Olympic Games and the World Cup. You know, Glasgow, I think, has recognised that, and I think one of the things that's been interesting to me is that I think Glasgow has put in place certain policies and approaches before the Games that do pay attention to the critique of these Games. So they have, for example, companies who have won contracts for the Games, they've had to sign up to community benefit clauses. These community benefit clauses are at least an attempt to say, what are you giving back to Glasgow from winning the contract? Not, you know, so are you going to get local employment? And asking companies to state that. Now, because the economic benefits that are often put forward for these events have been really open to a lot of critique, because when it's come down to it, the beneficiaries have tended to be quite large corporations, advertising PR companies, same people who tend to travel the globe as a circuit of working on these events, and that, you know, those are the groups that have tended to benefit, and actually that's why host communities have economically not necessarily received the trickle down effect that was put forward. So pre-event, I think Glasgow has done that. It hasn't had to build facilities to any great extent, so, you know, it's not been subject to the criticism of You've gone and spent millions and millions, or billions actually, on building new facilities that will never be used. It's used its kind of investment in the past as a reason for saying, you know, we only need to build 20-30% new infrastructure, and that new infrastructure will also be used. We know it will be used already. It's not like it's a hope like it was in some other area. So pre-event, I think Glasgow's had quite a good story to tell on that. During the event, the benefits, well, I mean, clearly there's a halo effect that comes from having an event. It will be a fantastic event. The media will be supportive of it. People who are there and in the city will enjoy it. There's lots for people to do, you know, sporting-wise, culturally. It's quite a rich cultural programme, I think, which we'll talk about in a minute. During the Games, any criticism of the Games will always pass by. But then you're into after. And I think after, the debates will be about the kind of, I guess, the professed benefits, that the statements of intent in terms of what Glasgow would deliver, and actually the timeline on that delivery, because it's really hard to make a judgment on whether Glasgow delivered in August 2014 when the Games finish. So, you know, economists and others are kind of debating quite heavily, when can you judge whether the benefits came? Because, you know, participation in sport, a healthier, more active populace, you know, we will not know that in 2014, but that's where the political debate will be, because, you know, the next time sports participation figures come out, the next time that we report on health statistics in Scotland, that's when we'll begin to know whether actually the apparent impact of the Games has come through. And one of the things I think is really problematic here is that Games will not produce sports participation benefits or health benefits on their own. It's impossible. And that's one of the key issues and key problems I have with Games, is that they often purport to do that. They cannot do it. They can only catalyse activity. They can only incentivise and motivate certain policies and investments, perhaps. They can't actually do it on their own. And so, in some ways, it's quite unfortunate that they get that the claims made are open to so much scrutiny, because, you know, it's got to be a multi-agency thing as to whether that actually will make the benefit. So, one final thing on that is that Glasgow has actually also invested and committed to producing evaluation of its targets, of its benefits for 10 years after the events, which I think is actually a positive thing, because they are open to be transparent and accountable to say, we will, you know, publish information about whether the things we said would happen are actually going to happen. In the past, that was never the case. You know, Games just were held because a politician thought it was a good thing to do, and it was maybe going to help them get back into office. It was an election policy. Now you have to account for it. You know, and me, you, anyone else can have a voice that say, well, wait a minute, I don't think this is right that we should be spending this amount of money.
Mm-hmm. So the London Olympics were only last year. How do you think this has influenced the preparation for Glasgow 2014?
I think it's probably been really beneficial and advantageous. I think they signed a memorandum of understanding with the London 2012 organising committee, so I think they've learned a lot from them. I think they've had access to lots of their information, their knowledge about how to run a major multi-sport event. So I think in that context, I think having them close together has been really useful. I think now the focus turns to Glasgow. Now they've got enough time. They've probably been able to do preparations behind the scenes a little bit more effectively than maybe even London could, because it was, you know, it was open to full scrutiny all the time since 2005 when it won the bid. I think Glasgow's had this kind of opportunity to be behind the scenes a little bit over the last few years. Now it comes into the forefront and it has to deliver. But I think undoubtedly they've appointed people from London. They've, as I said, learned from London in terms of the knowledge.
So recently the cultural aspect for the Games was launched. What's the importance of including the arts within the Games?
For me, I think it's about accountability, about transparency, about legitimacy for the event. If you hold a major multi-sports event and say, you know, and it's all about sport, it's only about sport, you are missing out a huge part of the population who don't A, participate in sport, B, even watch sport, not interested in sport. Now, these games are funded by the taxpayer. They're funded by a wider populace who have different interests, and some of those may be in the realms of culture or the arts, for example. Over recent years, there has been again an attempt to more effectively embed culture as part of the Olympics, as part of other multi-sport events. Some people at some times see it as being pretty tokenistic, that it's a kind of, and also that when budgets have been cut, the first thing to go has been culture and the arts. I think that's changing, and I think increasingly multi-agency organisations deliver games. So there's an organising committee that delivers a game, but also the local authority, the Creative Scotland in this context, which is a non-governmental body responsible for the arts and culture. They're all at the table right from the start, and I think that means that you end up with a cultural programme that is embedded, that often offers a critique of sport, often offers a critique of the games and the big event itself, deals with issues about local culture, about how that can be more effectively embedded in the games. Because if you're saying this is a Scottish Games, you know, a Commonwealth Games in Glasgow is a Scottish game, it's quite hard, sporting-wise, to do much of that, whereas actually the cultural terrain allows you to maybe take elements of culture across all parts of Scotland. You can do that because there's a richness in Scotland, and actually you can, you know, make it thematic around about Commonwealth-related themes. And so I think what we're getting with the cultural programme is you're getting a kind of reflection on Scotland's place in the world or in the Commonwealth at this time that's been able to be expressed through the kind of vehicle of a games, a multi-sports event. And that's quite timely because, of course, Scotland's also going through a process of political debate about its future. It's international, but it's locally meaningful. It's got elements of populist, you know, popular practice, popular art forms, big spectacular events, but it's also got pretty cutting edge critical responses to things like Commonwealth, things like sport, things like commercialism. You know, so I think in that respect, I think it's interesting. I think the dilemma is whether you actually can get people engaged with it from a wider public.
So on a personal level, what are you looking forward to about Glasgow 2014?
Well, I will take my family along to some of the sports competitions. I think that'll be great. I think the city will be, I think, alive, animated. It'll be cosmopolitan. It's the kind of thing that cities want to do because it enables them to say, here, we're the kind of place you'd want to come and visit, or come and stay, or come and have your headquarters for your organisation. So, but I think, you know, generally just being able to go around in the city and move around and see all these people going around to enjoy a sporting event is actually quite alluring.